Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am truly honored to share the microphone with the most interesting people. Now, these are people who are business leaders, they're entrepreneurs, and they have wonderful stories to share, and they are here to freely share their journeys and their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was recently written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. Our topic today, this is a fun one. I've been waiting for this one for a while. Groundhog Day is an event, not a business strategy, with my friend, my very good friend, Adam Homey. Now, a bit about my guest. Adam Homey is the founder and creator of the Business Creators Institute, and he helps you emancipate the power of information and win at the game of business and marketing so you can spend a whole lot less time editing and maintaining and more time educating your audience and monetizing your business. Very important. He is the host of the wildly popular Business Creators Radio show, and I will be a guest pretty soon, and has spoken around the country at events including the Dream Business Academy, the Seller's Playbook, and Advanced Marketing Minds. And for years, Adam has been the secret weapon in the arsenal of dozens of internet marketers, executive marketing solution providers, and professional service providers, such as attorneys, accountants, medical professionals, and many, many more. And he's also been a featured contributor in the international Amazon bestseller, Journeys to Success, the Millennial Edition, and his much anticipated, by me at any rate, and many of the people I know, new book, Groundhog Day is an Event, Not a Business Strategy, will hit the shelves on February 2nd, and I will be reviewing it. Adam, welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so glad to have you here in the new year.
Well, it's always an honor to be here, and, you know, it's funny, you and I both have our personal assistants in our offices, and Princess Alessandra is sitting right on my desk right now. It's still pretty early here in Las Vegas, and normally after I get started and come into the office, she'll come and sit with me for a while, usually involving blocking my view of the monitor, and then when I'm trying to type or trying to use the mouse, interfering with it. Eventually, she'll go take a nap, but right now she's here to join us, so your listeners are getting basically two for the price of one.
They're getting more than that. My two ginger boys are doing exactly the same thing. They're blocking my monitors. My keyboard is actually in my lap because they've stretched out. And you will probably hear Hamilton discussing his either pleasure or displeasure with what we're talking about. So everybody, if you hear yowling, it's just a cat. You know, they keep us,
all right,
keep us moving. So anyway, I'm so glad to have you back. And Groundhog Day, I know a bit about this, but what in the world got you on this journey with Groundhog Day?
All right. Well, the idea and the concept behind the upcoming book, Groundhog Day is an Event, Not a Business Strategy, is that over the past 14 years, I've collated all these case studies, stories, and lessons that are coming together as a new blueprint for small business success. And what I've discovered over the course of my work is it's about a lot of the little things that burrow deep in your business that may be holding you back in ways you cannot see because, well, they're underground. And to give you a little bit of analogy about this, let's talk about groundhogs and Groundhog Day. Many of our listeners are probably thinking, Groundhog Day? Well, yeah, that was a movie. And to me, that movie serves as sort of an allegory for what many business creators go through with all these, you know, these best year ever declarations, and this is going to be my best year ever, and I'm going to shoot for the sun, and if I miss, I'll still hit the stars. Well, meantime, some of these same folks have made the same declarations year after year after year after year, and it seems like Groundhog Day all over again. And that's one of the themes. Another theme is, let's look at a little bit about groundhog behavior and a few surprising facts about these groundhogs, these cute little animals that burrow deep in your yard. The fact is that groundhog burrows, the places where groundhogs live, run deep and long. I mean, think about 45 feet of tunnels, 5 feet or more deep underground, so at least 5 feet deep underground. And some of them even run deeper, and often they go directly underneath building foundations. You could very well, I don't know if you have groundhogs in your part of the country, but if you do, there could be a groundhog burrow underneath the foundation of your house. I mean, these run very deep, and sometimes they're hibernation burrows. When they go into hibernation in the wintertime, can go 8 feet deep. And what's interesting about these burrows also is they have multiple entrances. There's more than one way in usually, and they have chambers. So think about rooms. And these rooms have specific purposes. There's a room where they eat. There's a room where they sleep. There's a room where they rear their young. There's a room that's the love shack. There's a room that they you would think of as like a bathroom. They're very sophisticated, almost like a human being's house. In fact, they did a study of 11 groundhog burrows, and this is very interesting. One of them was 24 foot long and had two side galleries, so it had sub burrows. And altogether, to dig out that burrow, that groundhog displaced 640 pounds of dirt. Do you know what 640 pounds of dirt looks like?
I can see it in the back of a truck. I mean, you'd have to bring in a front end loader, right? Right,
pretty much. If it's a pile of dirt, it's a pile of dirt that's about as tall as you. Now, other things about groundhogs is despite their very odd shape, if you've ever seen one up close, you know that they have a very unique physiology. They make excellent swimmers and tree climbers, so they can really go anywhere. And the fact that they can displace 640 feet of dirt and they're about the third of the size of an adult cat also means they're muscular, strong, tenacious little things. They're known for their aggressive personalities. I mean, do you know anybody who has a pet groundhog?
No. I've never seen one outside of, you know, the pictures on Groundhog Day.
Right. They may not be down in Louisiana. I've looked at these different maps of where groundhogs reside, and I don't have one in front of me right now, but it's possible they're not down there. Like here in Las Vegas, we don't have groundhogs. When we celebrate what the people in Punxsutawney call Groundhog Day, we celebrate the same thing, but we do it with a desert tortoise.
That makes sense.
Now, what's also interesting about groundhogs, and think about this in your company and think about this in what you do on a day-to-day basis, they have what's known as a diurnal lifestyle, and that means they're most active in the early morning and the late afternoon. Have you ever noticed that a lot of the stuff that happens in your business is in the early morning and the late afternoon?
Yes, and I found through trial and error because my furnace is not
right.
Working and it's pretty chilly in my house, so I may be biting my tongue every once in a while. But I, for the longest kind of time, Adam, I thought, I'm just a morning person. I hit the floor running. The devil says, oh, crap, she's awake. And off I go. But then, over time, I started paying attention to my rhythms, if you will, and I realized that I'm exactly what you're describing. I am just going full bore for several hours in the morning, and then about midday, I just crash. So, I wander off. I go cook. I love to cook. I spend time outside gardening if the ground is not frozen, which it is right now. And then late afternoon to early evening, I'm right back where I was when my feet hit the floor that morning. I am off and zooming. So I've learned to work within those two time frames because that's when I'm the most creative and the most interested.
Right. Okay, that's absolutely true. Let me just tell you guys a little bit more about groundhogs and what makes them interesting. We spoke about how a single groundhog can displace 640 pounds of dirt digging out their burrow. Now, when they displace that dirt, they are, at least in that sense, an ally of the farmer, because they aid in soil improvement by bringing subsoil to the surface, just like surfacing issues helps your company. Think about things are burrowed down deep, some of the little things that are lurking beneath the surface. So by bringing that to the surface, it nurtures the soil and allows your company to grow. Another interesting thing about groundhogs is that they eat things like beetles, grasshoppers, field mice, and other creatures that prey on crops. And, you know, think about the silver lining. We'll have talk a little bit more about silver linings if we have time today. And what's also interesting is that rabbits, foxes, and skunks will sometimes set up housekeeping in groundhog burrows, which keep them out of the way of the crops and the farmer. Now, it's important that we do surface these issues because the burrows beneath your business can weaken your foundation. As I just said, in areas where groundhogs live, sometimes they dig their burrows underneath the foundations of houses. So you can end up weakening your foundation with all these burrowings. Also consider that there have been stories of farmers out on their farm driving their tractor, and next thing you know, the tractor literally falls into the ground, falls sideways, falls deep. What happened is they fell into a groundhog burrow. I also want you to think about this. Before the breakthrough comes the breakdown. So when you're having a breakdown, that often means you're close to a breakthrough. So think about how displacing the soil and breaking down the soil leads to better crops. And a final note about groundhogs is when you confront them head on, what they're usually going to do is they're going to stand up and shriek. I mean, they're these little mini creatures, but, you know, it's like, I am groundhog, hear me shriek. Rah! And it'll give you the opportunity to prove what you're really made of.
Okay, I'm picturing that. So basically, when you put it into a business kind of thing, you need to look under the surface, what it is that you've done, what it is that you've kind of opened up and then maybe never filled in or, you know, worked with. So you have gaps, you have hollows underneath your business. Is that about right?
That's pretty much it.
Okay. Look, we all do it. I mean, you know, going back to what you were talking about earlier, I am absolutely guilty of, you know, every year I think, okay, this year I'm going to do it. And I finally, a couple of years ago, said, you know, clearly I'm not going to do it. It was probably a great idea for somebody else, but not for me, so let's hand this off to someone else. And I've sold domain names. I've given away ideas. Like, I'm not going to do this. I think it's a good fit for you. It's yours. It's a gift. And then I go on to do something that I actually will do and that I'm passionate about. So you're right.
Right.
I mean, it's just too easy to get caught up and say, oh, I can do that. I can do that. In fact, I created a meme yesterday. Quit saying I can do this myself. Hire a professional.
Right.
Seriously.
Very true.
Hire somebody who can make your life easier.
Very true. Yeah. I mean, and again, as we're going to discover when the book comes out, it's largely a narrative of a lot of little things. In some cases, I place myself as the hero of the story. Sometimes it's a client. Sometimes it's somebody who's just a friend of mine. So we do things like that. And another thing that's going to be interesting about the upcoming Groundhog book is it's not going to fit into the box of a traditional book. Because you think of traditional business books and we discover, and this is, in fact, one of the first things we talk about in the book, is the issue of white line fever. Now, people may be thinking white line fever is like, oh, man, are we going to be talking about cocaine, man? Well, no. What I mean by white line fever is, Denise, have you ever taken a long drive, especially if it's like on an interstate highway, and then noticed that like 45 minutes went by, and you've managed to make 45 minutes of the journey, but you don't for one thing about what the hell you've just done?
Yes, and it's scary because you realize that you're going on automatic and you're not paying attention and you could possibly be in potentially dangerous situations. It's not smart. It's not good.
The funny thing is you're actually not in any danger because you will be pattern interrupted if something happens. But if it's a smooth
really?
Ride, especially if it's on a long drive down an interstate highway or something like that,
yeah,
you can go into a sort of trance, especially if you've been down that path before. You're fully alert. It's just the fact that you've been down that road so many times means that you kind of go into trance over it. Now, think about when that happens.
Between here and Lake Charles, that's, you know,
exactly,
that's the most tedious drive in the world. I mean, here to Lake Charles, Louisiana, if you want to just kind of sleepwalk your way through it, get on that road. It's horrible.
Yeah. Exactly. So think about that when entrepreneurs and business creators will create copy or they'll create graphics for their websites or they'll do promotional pieces, anything that involves copy and accuracy, and they discover that there's a typo there. I had this case once with somebody who they own a company that does career coaching for executives, And they had a big graphic. It was like the hero image of the front page of their website. And for 6 months, that graphic was up there, and it was missing the word in, where the word in should have been inside the sentence. Took 6 months.
But nobody read it wrong, I'm willing to bet, because we read, we see what we expect to see, right?
Exactly. That's exactly my point. That's exactly my point, is the business owner who created the copy and the designer all believed that the word in was there because they were used to, in their mind's eye, seeing the word in. So when it didn't make it to the graphic, that was missed. White line fever. So part of the design of the Groundhog book is it's going to have short sentences and short paragraphs and lots of bullet points and things like that, because I want people to feel pattern interrupted. In addition, sometimes it's going to feel like we're opening loops, and sometimes it feel like we're jumping back and forth a little bit. And again, for the same reason, because I want people to keep checking in and saying, where are we? What does this mean? Where are we going with this? And the more I can keep them out of that white line fever, the more that they will appreciate and be able to follow the narrative. I want this to be the type of book you can read in about an hour and say, hey, you know what? I picked up this one little thing, or I picked up these three things that I wasn't really noticing in my business and how I communicate with my prospects and my audience, but now I get it and I can start doing better. Now, Denise, I agree that, you know, due to the nature of this, it's very important that we understand that reaching our audience is very challenging, especially when they can receive up to 40,000 marketing messages in a day.
And, you know, honestly, Adam, this I've found this too. Some of the marketing messages come from in your own head. We're always marketing. We're marketing to other people. We're marketing to ourselves. We're having conversations. I mean, I will come up with ideas always in the shower. Go figure. And I'm marketing.
Right.
It's like, well, darn. You know, reach out, try to grab something I can ride on. But you're right. I mean, and we are overwhelmed with these, you know, this constant marketing, and it's just going to get worse. It really is.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So so you want to have some fun? Ask me my first question. I love this. I love this question. Go ahead. Lay it on me. Do it.
Okay. Your first question is, ding, 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 ding. There's something that everyone's trying to get more of in their business, and you say they should avoid this one at all costs. Come on now. Tell me. What is it? Because I can't even guess.
All right.
I can't. And I know you very well. I looked at that and went, what?
All right. What will happen is I'll get up on stage, or I'll do an interview like this, or I'll be teaching on a webinar, and I will say to the listeners that the absolute last thing that you need or want in your business is to be getting traffic to your website.
And I'm a web developer. And you have been a web developer too. And I am going to agree with you. And I tell this to people all the time.
Whoa, first one.
What? No, I absolutely agree with you. There are so many ways to reach a bigger audience, and there are millions and millions of websites out there. Do you have to have one? Yeah, I think you do. I'm not going to say don't have a website, but I'm going to say that you can have a much better marketing experience if you are actually connecting with people. Yeah, you want to drive them to certain parts of your website. In some places, a website barely, you know, sometimes it's basically a, you know, here's my calling card. And it can do a lot of good for you. It can also do a lot of bad. I've seen some really cruddy websites out there that shouldn't be on the web. But my thinking is, and I really can't wait to hear what you say, is that this is a connection society. We need to connect with one another, talk with one another, converse with one another, refer one another. And you can't do that on a website necessarily. So how far off am I?
Well, that is a point of view that I find is very interesting, and I've never quite thought of it exactly that way. It does, in a way, dovetail with where I was going with this. See, the reason I say that, and what will happen is I'll be standing in front of an audience, and people will lean forward, and they'll stare at me like I have five heads, and I just said the world is flat. Now, don't get me started on the fact that there are people actually out there who believe the world is flat.
They do.
Yeah, I mean, as I say if the world was flat, we would know it because cats would have knocked everything off it already. But anyway, anyway, what happens is they look at me funny. And in fact, I was speaking at Jim Palmer's Dream Business Academy, and I have a photograph of an audience member strangling me for saying that. Somebody who owns a company.
Was it Jim?
No, it was not Jim. And I'm going to give a shout out here. It was One Click Lindsay Anderson, the founder of Traffic and Leads and creator of the Click Technique. So she literally owns a company called Traffic and Leads. And I've been on her marketing and Merlot show with Lindsay and Lindsay a few weeks ago. So I know her very well. And I have a photograph of her strangling me. I have posted this on my PowerPoint at Dream Business Academy with her in the room. And she said it wasn't her.
Well,
so one click. If you're listening,
when women say we didn't do it
for that time,
we're right. We didn't do it. Darn it.
Didn't do it. Wasn't me. Wasn't me like that song. But anyway, I just wanted to bring a little levity into this. But here's where I'm going with it. When I think of traffic, I think of the reason I work from a home office, because traffic is thousands of cars being forced into a roadway that was designed for hundreds, having to spend 2 hours taking what's supposed to be a 45-minute commute if it wasn't for all these other cars. And by the time you arrive at the office at 8:01 instead of 8 o'clock with five people tapping their watches wondering why you're being so lackadaisical and lollygagging your way in, you're already defeated for the day. And what's a website? A website can be an about page. It can be a contact page. It can be a sales page. It can be a podcast page. It can be a privacy policy page, a home page, a blog page. Get my picture? Every single one of those things can be a website, and a website can consist of all of those things. So what I look for instead of traffic to your website are visitors to your web. And we want visitors who are pre-qualified, prepped, and pumped, which I call the three P's of website conversions. The point here, Denise, and for your listeners as well, is everybody out there is talking about traffic to your website, traffic to your website. And of course you want traffic to your website. I mean, it's like build it and they will come. I mean, really. But what I want you to think about for those who are listening is how you can take something that everybody else is talking about that you do that may actually in some way be commoditized, or you may be asking yourself, well, what's really new under the sun here? And by putting a different name on it, you move yourself to a new position in the marketplace where you gather attention. I intentionally say that you do not want traffic to your website because that is a contrarian point of view that goes against all conventional wisdom and actually causes a pattern interrupt. Like, what? And now I have your attention, and I can explain the concept of visitors to your website and the three P's of website conversions: pre-qualified, prepped, and pumped. In other words, Denise, it breaks the white line fever.
And that makes sense. And, you know, honestly, I'm thinking, and we can talk about this another time, but I'm beginning to believe that artificial intelligence at some point will replace websites. And that's a whole other conversation.
Right.
But it's looking that way. You know, it's looking to, you know, WordPress, there's a plugin that lays on top of WordPress. Again, another conversation. But it's completely AI. It's artificial intelligence, which is brilliant because now you've got this bot talking to you and saying, where do you want to go on the website and how can I help you? It's very interactive. And many, many websites don't do that. So there are changes afoot. There's no question. And I agree with you. We need a website, but I don't think it's the have-all and be-all. You've got to have a lot of other things, a lot of other balls juggling in the air. You can't just depend on a website. And I will tell people who come to me, oh, I need a really, you know, great website. Okay, but what are you going to do with it when you get it? You know, how are you going to drive traffic there? What is its purpose? What is the consumer or the customer experience going to be? And we have to peel that onion. So, I mean, I've turned people away. Oh, I just want a website. Well, one of my talks, Adam, is your web developer built you a pretty boat anchor. Now what? Because if you are not actively working with that website and getting people there and then giving them what they need when they get there, you've got a gorgeous boat anchor, but you're dead in the water.
Yes, absolutely. That's very true, and I love that. I love that analogy.
Well, I mean, I cannot in good conscience build somebody a multi-$1,000 website and go, here you are, here's the keys, good luck, God bless. I couldn't sleep.
Right.
So let's talk about greed. I love greed. Is greed good or is greed bad? And how do you define greed? Because you and I, we know each other pretty well. I think we probably define it the same way. But here's my thinking, Adam. If you're building a website and you're doing all this stuff and you're basically treating it as a hobby, I don't even know why people do this, but I don't think greed is a bad thing. I think monetizing your life so you can have the lifestyle you want is a very good thing. You can call me greedy all day long. I will be monetizing.
All right, so let's rewind that a step. You've probably seen or at least heard that movie called Wall Street. Remember that movie from the 1980s?
I've heard of it. I'm not a movie person, but I have heard of it.
That's fine. Many of our listeners may be aware that there was a movie. It came out, I believe, in 1987, and it was called Wall Street. And it starred Charlie Sheen and Michael Douglas, where Michael Douglas played the character Gordon Gekko. He was giving a speech to the shareholders of Teldar Paper, which he had recently raided and taken over. And there was a conception that he had stood up at that meeting and said, greed is good. You saw all the movie previews, the movie trailers, or all these clips on YouTube to this day that have him saying greed is good. But the fact is, he never said greed is good. It was edited to make you think he said greed is good. You can go watch the movie yourself. Go buy the DVD or find it on Amazon or something like that and watch it. Watch Wall Street, and you will never hear Gordon Gekko say greed is good. He did not say it. He said something else. He said greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Let me say that again. Greed, for lack of a better word, is good. So let's think about what we were taught about greed as we were growing up. Many of us, myself included, have brought candy to class for ourselves, but then we got caught eating the candy, and then the teacher would say, all right, I caught you with that chocolate bar, so tomorrow you have to bring chocolate bars for everybody in the class. The reason why a teacher will do that is to teach you not to be greedy. We're taught that altruism is good. We're taught that being selfish is bad. Never mind that you can serve a lot more people from an overflowing cup than you can from an empty cup. So let's think about what we really mean here. And Denise, you kind of hit the nail on the head, but I will expand on it a little bit. Let's look at what Gordon Gekko actually said. I have the script right in front of me, and you can go check this out for yourself, and I'm reading it word for word. He said, greed, for lack of a better word, is good. So see right there, he's not saying greed is good. He's saying greed, for lack of a better word, is good. So he's avoiding that resistance point that says, no, greed is bad. He's not saying greed is good. He's saying greed, for lack of a better word, is good. It's something, and he leaves it to you to decide what it is. So let me start again. Greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed in all of its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind. And greed, you mark my words, will not only save Teldar Paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA. Is there something in there you can agree with?
All of it.
Exactly.
All of it.
Exactly.
But, you know, I'm a voracious reader. I understand words are important, and I understand the meaning of words. So this word doesn't bother me a bit. I mean, and you're right. You cannot give from an empty cup. You just cannot. So if it's greedy to want to employ people, if it's greedy for me to want to make money to live a lifestyle that I genuinely want to live and do live, if it's greedy for me to make enough money to have the car that I want, you know, if you're using that word to make something ugly out of my desire for a good life and to help the people around me, you're not going to be hanging around with me very long. I can tell you that right now.
Very true. Yeah, let me give you two examples here, and I know we have a lot of stuff we're going to cover. So, you know, you have people that find themselves in a very high tax bracket, and so in order to lower their tax bracket, lower their tax liability, and be able to keep more of their own money, they will give to charity. Now, the fact is that they were driven to give to charity so that they could keep more of their money and pay less in taxes. And they'll probably get some sort of civic do-gooder award for the fact that they gave all that money. But did the kids still get help?
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't care why they did it. They did it. And it did
right.
help a lot of people. Money, when it is spread around, is very helpful to just about anybody who's receiving it. I don't understand the whole greed concept. I really don't.
Right. Yeah, so that's one thing we want to break people out of. I'll give you one other thing. You know, all you have to do is go on social media and you see people that actually have no freaking clue. They think they know everything about politics, and it's like, ooh, I shared an emotional meme. I am now a thought leader. Yeah, right. Okay. So one of the things we talk about a lot are is the recent tax reform, and you can hear every opinion on both sides of it. And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And my point that I've made over and over is, if this is something, and again, I'm not, you know, my views are just my very own views, and I don't want to get into a discussion about this in general, but if this thing serves one of its intended purposes, which is to encourage companies to build more factories and do more of their work and employ more people right here in the United States, what will happen is it'll increase the tax base, so we collect more taxes, which will increase our revenues, and it will encourage companies to invest here. And when you have one company, you often need to hire other companies to support that company. So going back to when we did the bailout of the auto industry 8 years ago, I understood exactly why we did it, because it wasn't just those car manufacturing plants, but all the suppliers and all the subsidiaries that were going to go down unless we saved the auto industry. So it's actually the same principle when you look at both the auto industry bailout and the tax reform. And folks say, well, companies will never do that because they're so greedy. And you know what I say is, companies are always going to look at the bottom line. They're going to look at ways to minimize expenses and maximize profits. So if we can make them a better deal, exactly. So if we can make them a better deal, a deal that makes it more palatable and more reasonable for them to invest right here in the United States, even if it's still not as good as going overseas, but good enough that they can afford it, and it will put them in a place where they can reap the public relations benefits of doing it. I mean, just recently we've heard, and again, I hope this pans out, that Apple has announced that they're going to be moving manufacturing and jobs and right here to the United States, and they're going to bring money that they've had out of the country back into the country and pay billions of dollars of taxes on it. So if they're doing that because they're greedy, well, we just create a lot of jobs, and we just put billions and billions of dollars back into the revenues of this country, which we desperately need. So tell me if greed is bad in that case.
No, it's really not, and I understand why they, you know, put that money somewhere else. I mean, they were practically forced to by some very bad policies.
Sure.
But they're willing to take that huge tax hit to bring it back to America, which is where it all started. I call that loyalty. I mean, they're an American company. Yeah, they had to do what they had to do to stay in business. But now that some of those regulations are off and, you know, things are finally going back to what I think should have happened all along, you know, they could keep those billions of dollars in taxes and just keep it on out there in those offshore accounts. They're not doing that.
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about saying, you know, I love my country. I want to help my country. I want my fellow man to have jobs.
Right.
Think about it. Yeah, this is not an evil corporation. They have done everything they could to stay in business, and now they're coming back home. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, so they can talk about, oh, this is just a tax break for the rich and the tax scam and all that and all these other things I hear. But the fact is, if companies are going to go for the bottom line, you appeal to that. Greed, for lack of a better word, is good. So appeal to it, and look what happens. Now we're going to have all these new jobs. We're going to get these tax revenues that with our deficits and everything, we desperately need. So, hey, works for me. That's all I got to say. Now, I know we have a lot more we want to cover here.
Yeah, well, and one of the things I wanted to ask you about, too, is because, you know, we are in the age of the entrepreneur. I don't think there's any question about that. And the better that entrepreneurs can connect and network with other like-minded entrepreneurs, or even, look, some of my very dearest friends, who are in the entrepreneur space, are very different from me in terms of theology and politics. I can't even talk right now. My teeth are actually kind of chattering. I'm turning on my heater under my desk. But
theology
it doesn't matter
politics,
because
yeah.
We really all want the same thing, which is to help each other, to help, you know, the people around us. I mean, entrepreneurs are created or made because we really, and this is my view, but we really have something that we want to share with the world at large, and it's to help you. It's not to, you know, take money out of your pocket. It's not to make you feel bad about anything. We really feel a genuine need to help other people. And I find that
right.
entrepreneurs across the spectrum have that in their mind. So my question, Adam, is now I think we're going to see a huge uptick in people go, oh, you know, I always had this idea or I've had this life experience and I want to share it. I suspect very strongly we're going to see a huge surge in new entrepreneurs hitting the playing field. What do you think?
I believe so. I believe so very strongly. Because
so
the future of America, as I see it, is in fact small business. Part of what I'm doing with the Groundhog Book is designed to help get people out of some of those little things that are burrowed beneath the surface. And what the reason I've spoken with you about white line fever and renaming the thing that everybody else is doing and looking at greed in a different way is I've created so far three pattern interrupts for your audience that cause them to stop and say, wait a minute, what's going on here? And it opens your eyes, it focuses you. Just like, let's say you were driving to Lake Charles and you were in the trance of white line fever and all of a sudden an 18-wheeler jumps in front of you. You will jump out of that trance in a big hurry so that you can slam on the brakes, take evasive action, or do whatever you need to do so you don't wreck. It will happen. But it requires that interruption of your view for you to snap out of that trance. And that's what we're looking to accomplish here.
Okay, so what would you, and I know that our audience is going to say, oh, you know, I kind of wanted to start a little side business, or hey, I'm going to be retiring pretty soon, and you know, I've got this great idea, I've had this great idea, but the climate just wasn't right. I was always worried about money, but now, you know, I think I might be ready. What would your advice to them be?
My advice is pretty simple. I'm going to borrow something from my friend James Malinchak as he shares at some of his big money speaker events. And let's say you want to start a flower shop. Now, some folks might start a flower shop by, you know, looking for a place to put the flowers. You know, you find a storefront, then you make the deals with the suppliers, and you know, get all the advanced watering systems so that you automatically water the plants. You get the lighting, you get the, you know, you build the storefront, you do the marketing and advertising, everything else. And then you throw open the doors and say, okay, well, I have a business here. Well, where are the customers? If you want to go into the flower business, a good way to test that is to go buy a bunch of flowers, put them in the back of your pickup truck, put an ad on Craigslist and say, hey, I'm selling flowers today. Now you're in the flower business. So to translate that to real time, if you have something you can do for the world, whether it's a product, whether it's a service, whether it's a program that sits at the intersection of your brilliance and passion, and I think that we all want to, you know, serve from the intersection of our brilliance and passion. I know that our mutual friend Larry Winget has different thoughts on passion, but I also think that passion is pretty important from the perspective of it's got to be something that gets you up in the morning. You got to at least be doing something with your life that you can wake up without, you know, without saying, oh, God, my day's going to suck because I got to do this. And even if you don't like what you're doing right now, my advice is going along with the whole thing about, you know, the debate over whether the passion is necessary is find what it is about it you like. You may not like what you're doing so much, or maybe that thing you're doing because it's the fastest way to make money. And that's another piece of advice that's commonly given. Find the fastest path to the cash. Fine, you don't like what you're doing right now, but focus on two things. Something about what you're doing that is in fact enjoyable to you, because it can't be all bad. If it's all bad, there's no way you could even physically do it. And think about where you're headed. I remember reading about this in it was one of the many Trump books. I think it was Think Big and Kick Ass. There was a piece of advice that has stuck with me to this day. If you're an accountant, don't just say you're an accountant. Say something like, I'm an accountant on my way to becoming a CFO. So you think about where you are now and where you're headed. just like that old advice, you know, dress for the job that you want, not for the job that you have. Program your mind for where you want to go, not where you are right now. So if you want to start a business right now, start a business. Find the fastest path to the cash. Find something that you can enjoy or at least tolerate doing. And again, may not be your passion, but find something about it that makes you passionate, even if it's the altruism of doing it, and then plot your course of where you're going to go with it. So I'm a web developer on my way to becoming an award-winning copywriter. I am a virtual assistant on my way to becoming an online business manager. I'm a podcaster on my way to having an Emmy award-winning radio show on an actual radio station. So that's what you look at. You look at where you're going to be right now, your fastest path to the cash, and at the same time, program yourself to where you're heading and start placing yourself in that situation and work backwards and design the steps that are going to get you there.
Oh, I agree. Listen, my attitude about passion is that, honestly, passion without action is just daydreaming. It's fun.
Yes.
Doesn't get you anywhere. Okay.
True.
So, and I love how you just peeled that onion. And a lot of people will go, okay, you know, I am an online business manager. What I really want to do, though, is be a course creator and an author. So guess what I'm doing? Both of them.
Yep. So I am a social media manager on my way to publishing my own book and creating my own content.
Exactly. And listen, I have that talk with myself every day because, you know, I have been guilty of having that white line blindness, and I never even thought of it. But what happened with me, and I suspect that this has happened with more people than actually come out and say it happened, but when I first built my business as a virtual assistant web developer, I really didn't have any systems in place, and I grew way faster than I ever anticipated. And it created a heck of a mess for me because I had to go back and start putting systems into place. And then as time went on, I thought, well, you know, I'm making really good money. My business keeps growing. But I also realized I really don't want to do this anymore. I love building websites. Love it. I mean, I can do it in my sleep. But the whole virtual assistance part of it, I've really lost my, let's use that word, passion. But I really just don't enjoy it anymore, largely because I've been doing it for so long. But honest to God, Adam, there's no challenge for me. I'm a techie nerd. I absorb this stuff, you know, by breathing practically. There's no challenge, and I don't want to do it anymore. I want to be challenged. I want to challenge myself, so I'm going in a slightly different direction. But I stayed in that white line for the longest kind of time because it worked. Paid my mortgage, paid off my car. Everything's all good. But I was kind of like, I'm trucking along, and nothing's really happening. I'm not really going, is this good anymore? Is this fun anymore? The truth is, it's not fun anymore. So I'm doing something different. And it's scary. I'm going to tell you right now, it's a little scary. I know you have. And it's frightening because you take a business model that works, and all of a sudden you're going, I'm going to go do something completely different.
Yep.
Yeah, I know.
Back in 2009, I used to own a web development firm myself. So my trajectory is kind of the opposite of yours. And I wanted to do this about as much as I wanted to lobotomize myself with a butter knife. So I made the decision to basically fire all the clients. I mean, I did it nicely in most cases, although in a few cases I will tell you I had some fun with it. But all in all, I helped with the transitions, and I also looked at, you know, which clients I thought were great candidates to come along with where I was headed. My accountant thought I was crazy until we saw the changes in my profit margins. But the fact was, is we had a company that was serving almost 50 clients, some of whom I didn't even know. But I didn't like that because that was not my vision for my business. And I had just kind of gotten to the point, like, I don't want to deal with Internet Explorer 6 anymore. Screw that freaking software. It's one of the 20 worst softwares of all time. Now, fortunately, we don't care about that anymore. We care about mobile. We care about mobile compatibility. But back in that day, it was still about, we have to make sure this website is compatible with Internet Explorer 6, even though it was rated one of the 20 worst softwares of all time, because 17% of the people still use it.
Yeah, I know. I had to test in everything out there. That was time consuming.
Yeah. You know where I ended up? I'll just tell you a quick story because I know we want to move on to something else in our next 15 minutes. Of where I left off is that was right around the time that WordPress evolved from just being a blogging software to being an actual website management software with themes and everything else. And they developed plugins where if the person attempted to access to the website through Internet Explorer 6, it would put up a message that says, you need to upgrade your browser. Here's the link to do so. And to me, that was my compatibility with Internet Explorer 6, which is, hey, it responds to it, and it tells them to get a real browser. Yeah, it's compatible.
I know. Things change. And I think we're seeing a lot of that because things are changing so, so quickly. Things that I was doing when I first started are, yeah, and I keep a swipe file of all the different things, and I'll go back and look and go, oh, my gosh, you know, that was almost Stone Age stuff, and it really wasn't that long ago. But that's how quickly things move along. And that kind of leads me to my next question. So now that we've introduced a few different ways for people to look at things, whether it's technology, whether it's, you know, they're going to build a course or they're going to be a consultant, write a book, it's pretty easy to do these things now considering what it was just even 4 or 5 years ago. I still think, and I will maintain, that you need professional help to do a lot of these things because you will be spending an awful lot of time going, I don't understand this. So it
I hear Kitty.
Us even, yeah, that one's Hamilton. He's trying to see something out the window that's got him bugged. But, you know, the thing is, as entrepreneurs, we have teams. We're not silly enough to do all this stuff on our own, even though we can.
Right.
I mean, I don't ever ask my team to do something that I can't personally do because I need to be able to communicate with them what I want. Doesn't mean I should be doing it. For instance, I hate Infusionsoft. Hate it.
Uh-huh.
I have people on my team who can work in that. But here's what I want you to kind of explain to our audience. Now that we've, you know, figured out disruption, now that we've figured out how they can probably start doing something, how can some of the things that you've talked about just even, you know, 20 minutes ago help business creators and entrepreneurs overcome the barriers to their own success? Because I know a lot of them are going, I'm not sure I follow. What do I do next?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that's one other thing, too, and you raise a very good point about knowing what you're doing so you can help others do it. I heard a story about somebody once, and this person had the idea they wanted to go into the virtual assistant business. They themselves could not log into a shopping cart account. They didn't know how to do WordPress. They couldn't even do a blog post. So their vision was, is they were going to charge $75 an hour and have other people do all the work. And they actually went and approached virtual assistants with this model of, hey, I want you to come work for me, and I want to pay you like, I don't know, something like $35 an hour or whatever the going rate was 5 years ago. It's gone up since then. I mean, I certainly pay my people more than $35 an hour because I want the best. And I had a couple of those folks who knew I knew this person and knew me actually come to me and say, I just want you to see what your friend sent me and tell her that I better never see her in a dark alley, because this is the most insulting thing I've ever seen in my life. She knows nothing about virtual assistants. She says so, and she literally says that she plans to make me her slave and make money off my back. So I don't ever want to speak with her about anything because it's the most insulting thing I've ever seen in my business. And when I looked at it, I'm thinking, okay, so you want to go into a business you know nothing about and then expect other people who have businesses of their own to support you? No, not quite. There are a lot of groundhogs burrowed deep in that one. And one of the groundhogs I could say is burrowed deep in that one for the person who would have that idea. I mean, because we hear about, you know, build teams, leverage and all that, is I would say to that person altruistically, I would say, are you wanting to start this virtual assistants firm even though you're not a virtual assistant, you know, nothing about the virtual assistants industry or what a virtual assistant does because some coach leaned on you to create multiple streams of income and just go for the cash and leverage and hire teams and outsource? And they would probably say yes. And I would say to them, all right, so here's your choices. Become a virtual assistant yourself, spend a year doing it and get to know it, or find something that you do know very well. One of those two things.
And that's just it. And listen, you know, I'm a longtime virtual assistant. I'm actually an expert on the industry. I have found over the last several years, and you and I have talked about this, that the virtual assistant industry exploded, and not in a good way. And there are way too many people who have, maybe they were a receptionist for somebody, or you know, maybe they were an administrative assistant, and they somehow think that that's going to translate into a new business. It doesn't. There's an awful lot about this industry that we need to understand how it works, how it impacts our clients. I mean, we can do some serious damage to our clients if we don't have any sense at all about what it is that they need. I mean, you can really hurt your clients. So my advice there is that unless you know what you're doing and unless you've put in the time to learn the different things in this industry, don't do it. Don't hang your shingle out. Go work for another virtual assistant. Find a way to get into that industry, but don't do this. If you have been a virtual assistant for about a minute and a half, do not coach or mentor other virtual assistants. Don't do it. And now I'm off my soapbox. I just stepped down.
And there are some excellent coaches and mentors for virtual assistants. And I'm not going to mention any names because you're all actually friends with each other, and I don't want to accidentally leave somebody out. But I will say this, that those of you, and I include you in this category, who are very, very good at this, so I will say Denise Griffith is one of them. And there are others, but I don't want to accidentally leave somebody out, so I'm not going to list any other names, but they all know who they are, and you know who they are because you're friends with all of them. I know this for a fact.
Yeah. And I refer people to
them. These are people who have been doing it I've been in business for 14 years. They were already teaching this stuff when I got started.
Right. And any new business owner, any new entrepreneur that's coming on board, you are going to need assistance. But find the best qualified coaches, and I strongly recommend that you have a business coach. Find the best business mentors. I posted something on Facebook yesterday. If you think you want to be an entrepreneur, hang around with other entrepreneurs. Don't get advice from your mama. Don't get advice from your next-door neighbor or even your best friend. Just don't do it. Hang around where we hang around. Follow what we're doing. Ask us for advice. We're going to give you advice. We're happy to. We want to see you succeed. I mean, there's not a one of us that I know that says, oh, no, I'm not going to take – no, you might take business away from me. No. We don't our brains don't work like that.
True. True. Very, 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 very true. As I say, there's enough for everybody, and everybody's no is somebody else's yes. So when I say no to something, and I say no all the time, I just look at it from somebody just had their lucky day. I mean, I may have an opportunity in front of me, and I say, oh, goodness gracious, no, because I don't want to do it, because I don't believe in the company, or I just don't feel like I'm hitting it off with a prospective client or whatever. Could be a lot of reasons, but I know that just because I'm saying no to it, there's somebody out there that would kill to have this opportunity right now. And by me saying no, I just made it available to them.
Right. And I will often make an introduction. I'll say, no, I can't help you, but I know two or three people that can. Let me check in with them and I'll see if they want an introduction to you. And here's the thing, Adam, too, and I think a lot of people don't understand this. When I'm sending somebody to you, and I really can't stand this guy. There was just something about him that just made my skin crawl. Doesn't mean that he'll make your skin crawl. So I will never, ever tell you why I'm sending him to you. You're going to make your own decisions about that. So don't muddy the waters. If you're going to make referrals to somebody, do not muddy that water. Just make the referral and back away.
Right, we discover in the Groundhog book, we talk about the difference between a strong referral and a weak-ass referral. And we also have a lot of material about how to structure your language so that it allows people to assign their own meaning to it. We also talk about, why people seem to, even though they have their checklist of who their perfect romantic partner is, they still go for lying, cheating, loser, asshole, jerks. And I also give my readers advice on how you should become a jerk, or at least understand where the jerk is coming from, because they have a piece of the market cornered. They have people chasing them that for some reason doesn't make logical sense. When you look at that objectively without assigning any judgment or meaning to it, you develop an understanding that people will act and re- You know, people act and make decisions based on what it is that you appeal to them that causes them to respond. It's not what they say they want. It's not their perfect person checklist. It's not what they say they need. It's not, you know, that list of my romantic partner must do A, B, C, D, and E. It's what they respond to, that person that really excites them for just some reason. And they can't even necessarily put their finger on it. That is how you grow your business, because a lot of your best clients, your best opportunities will happen because they say, well, I don't know, that's a bit more money I was looking to spend, or, you know, it wasn't quite what I had in mind, but then they do it. And things work out so awesome for everybody involved. But you have to get past that checklist mentality, and you have to access what people will respond to. And the key to doing that is to leave room for them to respond to things for their reasons, not the reasons that you think they should have. And we speak about specific language techniques.
Well, and this is all seriously important, because one of the things that I have found over the years of, you know, owning my own business, because I am now unemployable, as you well know, nobody would be stupid enough to hire me because I run with scissors and I talk back. But here's the thing. One of the best things as a new entrepreneur, budding entrepreneur, even a seasoned entrepreneur, is listen. And I think this is where so many people make mistakes. They're so busy trying to import what they think the client or the customer needs and how they can help you and, you know, how big your computer science degree is and all of this stuff.
Right.
The best thing you can do is just shut up, utilize that mute button on your phone, and listen. Take notes. And that's where you're going to find out how you can really help people. Don't you think?
Right. Yes.
Okay, Adam, I know we're running out of time. This has been a fascinating conversation. Yeah. But earlier we discussed some of the barriers that business creators put between themselves and their success. I've done it. I've fessed up to it on the radio.
Yep.
And, you know, how to overcome it. But are there any barriers that they put between themselves and their prospects and their customers? I mean, what are some of the most common ones that you see?
We're running short on time here because our interview took some very interesting tactics. But I'm going to give you two words. Now, here's what happens. People say things in their sales copy and their email messages, and they say, well, wouldn't you agree that X, right? They use the phrase, wouldn't you agree? See, to me, that's an invitation for a challenge, because it immediately begs the question, why don't I agree? And let me give you another example. Like if somebody says to me, well, you know, I think it's a pretty good podcast. No, I'll say, no, I think it's an awful podcast. And I'll tell you exactly why. Because they use the word no, I'll challenge them just because they use the word. So if somebody says, wouldn't you agree? To be a contrarian, I'll find reasons not to agree. It creates a barrier. So here's what I tell people to say in copy and also in conversations. And I actually did this. If your listeners go back and rewind, I did this early in the interview. Change that to say, I agree. So I agree that the longer you wait to invest in yourself, the more you're just postponing the results you know will get you everything you've always wanted in business and life. I agree that trying to go it alone will make your journey that much more difficult than you have someone standing by your side and you have a team to support you. I agree that fostering effective communication in the workplace will get more things done. So what I'm doing is I'm stating agreement up front with a concept as I'm introducing it. Now, I'm not challenging you to say, wouldn't you agree, or are you in, or are you with me? Because that gives you the opportunity to say yes or no. I'm instead positioning myself and making a statement that many will agree with. So you can also, even if you personally prefer to have your hands on all the levers and do it all yourself, you can agree that trying to go it alone could make your journey that much more difficult than by outsourcing and building a team, although you personally choose to do it yourself. But you can still agree with me that that is a fact, even if it's not your personal experience. So that's one way of bringing down a barrier. And by using challenge languages, we end up putting barriers in ourselves, because when we use that language in our self-talk, we end up having arguments in our own brain.
Oh, I'm the queen of arguing with myself. My mother said I should have been an attorney. I can sit on the middle of the fence and argue out of both sides of my mouth just for fun. It's just an exercise.
Right.
Okay, we have about 33 seconds. We'll lose people in the chat room, but we'll still keep recording. So before we go, is there anything else you can recommend to business creators that helps them live at their brilliance and passion?
Well, since we're right at the top of the hour, let's just go ahead with the gift because I have a ton of stuff right now. And here's what I want your listeners to do. Go to businesscreatorsinstitute.com. That's www.businesscreatorsinstitute.com. And you can Google the phrase Business Creators Institute because I picked it specifically so that I could rise to the top of the search rankings. Google it, you'll find it. And in the menu of businesscreatorsinstitute.com, you're going to look for a link called Resource Kit. Click that. Get your free membership in the Resource Kit of the Business Creators Institute. You're going to have tens of hours of trainings and video webinar replays and decision tools worksheets, technology tips to help you out of some of your jams. I update this stuff regularly, and another thing we're going to be adding to the Business Creators Institute Resource Kit is as we go into the spring of 2018, and we know that spring's going to get here faster because we're going to get out of the Groundhog Day loop, is we're going to be doing a series of masterclasses. And I know that we're going to be doing one masterclass on reputation marketing software. We're going to be doing one on how to do Facebook pixels and introductions of Facebook ads in a practical way. So we're going to be sharing a lot of things that our business creators have told me that they very much want to see. Those are just two topics that I've already confirmed we're in the process of scheduling, but I'm planning to do maybe five or six of them total. So there's going to be a lot of great new content, and by joining the Resource Kit now, you'll have the opportunity to attend live and ask questions of our guests when we bring them in. So again, businesscreatorsinstitute.com, and go to Resource Kit. And just to keep this evergreen, we're going to do this cycle once a year. So even if they're listening to this 9 months from now, we're going to be pretty close to doing another round of masterclasses.
That is an absolutely excellent idea, and I'm heading over there. I'm pretty sure I already belong to a lot of what you're doing, but I'm going to check in with this. And normally this is where I ask where people can find you on the web, but I don't need to because you already did that, and thank you. And it has been a true pleasure speaking with you today. It's been too long. We need to keep in better touch. I mean, we're in touch on Facebook all the time, but we don't actually talk, and I've missed doing that. And I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. It was amazing. And today's episode was sponsored by my company, Your Office on the Web. If you're looking for full-on business creation services such as web development, virtual assistants, online business management, social media marketing, and so much more, please visit yourofficeontheweb.com. And be sure to look for us on iTunes. Just type in Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. I can do it, see? Adam, thanks again.
Thank you very much, Denise. It's always a pleasure to serve your audience.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.